It's time once again for another episode of the Buckhead Business Show. Being brought to you by the Buckhead Business Association. Broadcasting live from the Pro Business Channel studios in Atlanta. And now, here's your host for today's episode.
Hey, good morning, Buckhead. It's a good thing to see us out there this morning. I understand that we've upgraded the million-dollar view to the billion-dollar view here. We're live over Linux. We're looking south. It is a Chamber of Commerce day here. There's just no doubt about it. This morning in Vinton Studio, we're glad we've got Delray Wanamaker from the First Look Equities, and also we're going to a little bit about the World Chamber of Commerce today, World Trade Center. And then also we've got Ralph Watson, and Ralph Watson brings a wealth of business knowledge and, boy, some pretty cool experiences to us, which we're going to dive into a little earlier. But we're going to get started out and kind of break our show down into three pieces. But first of all, we want to thank the Buckhead Business Association for being a co-sponsor of this process and helping make it realities. Might not have Pro Business Channel without the Buckhead Business Association. Right, Rich?
I concur.
You know, we just came off a great event last week.
Yeah.
We were down, where was that, the Stave Room?
Yeah.
Did you get enough to eat?
Oh, and drink and photos. And it was an amazing event. Well attended. One of the signature events for the BBA throughout the year.
One of the good things about those events, when you have two kinds of whiskey to compare, right? And they're
right,
both free.
And did you get a tour of the brewery there?
Woo.
That was amazing, yeah.
When can we take that still home?
I know, right? They might charge you. They'd like you to take pictures, but I think they want to leave it there.
They want to keep it for sure. But we'll take the samples with us. That was good enough. If you missed that event here in Buckhead last week, Thursday night, we were down at the Stave Room down off. Well, I guess we're actually the edge of Buckhead, right?
Yeah, and that was the Taste of Buckhead 2016. We'll see you next year there.
That's right. We'll get ready to put it on your calendar. I don't know if we've got the date yet, but I'm sure it'll be a great experience. Well, let's roll right into Delray. I know that the importance of the marketplace today, I think you want to talk a little bit about crowdfunding, but you're doing some very special things with some education process. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this business, and then we'll go down some of those details because I think you've got a stack of information for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me here. I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, I really got into this business being an entrepreneur. I mean, I started off working for some larger corporations, MCI. Everybody remembers when WorldCom bought them, unfortunately, and now it's Verizon.
Right.
And then I moved into really smaller companies that were really in the emerging growth space. They weren't startups. I jumped into companies that were just going public. It's right before the dot-com bust, and really got involved with quite a few different startups, kind of ahead of their time. They were all out raising capital, all trying to make it work. And I really got my experience from working with them. And when the dot-com bust occurred, I was working for a company that had just sold some products to Chick-fil-A. Strangely enough, here now that I'm in Atlanta, I met some of the engineers that implemented it, which was kind of fun. But from there, I really jumped into starting my own companies, and I sold my last company in 2008 that I had just started, and you know, I had to raise capital for it. I had to go through this painful process that everybody's going through, right? Everybody hears about this. It was no easier back then, and so that really brought me into shifted gears and brought me into being an investor about 8 years ago. And at that point, I started building networks and trying to streamline that process and focusing on how to leverage technology, how to leverage relationships, what's working, what's not. So I've had the great pleasure of working with some of the leaders, you know, top leaders of the, you know, really in the country who helped shape the Jobs Act, you know, testifying in front of Congress and that sort of thing. And so I've been able to glean some insight as to what's happening. And so today I was hoping to, you know, we'll chat a little bit about that and what is it doing and what isn't it doing? Because I think there's a lot of misconceptions there.
I think we're probably kind of refreshing everybody's memory with a transition. You said something there. I want to pick on a word that you used.
Okay.
You said, unfortunately, MCI and WorldCom and all that process occurred. I think that growth of business is fortunate in that we are able to merge and change and grow, because if it stayed the same, it just would not be as much fun for folks like you, would it?
Yeah, no, and I'll clarify that. I think there were some things that happened when that acquisition, occurred. If I remember correctly, there was some fraud and some things that happened. So I say unfortunately only because of the times and some things that happened, but Verizon picked it up, and we all, obviously, Verizon's a leader today, so you're right.
And we're benefiting because we lost some of that corruption, and we had some very nice use of our judicial system while we went through it.
Yeah, we learned some things.
The other thing I want to compliment you on is, obviously, you are a victim or a recipient and certainly a proud father of what we call table money in the industry. You were able to take some money off the table and then reinvest it and change the vocation of what we now look at as our funding process. So congratulations. Looking forward to hearing a little bit more about that. Now, as we go forward, you know, you're going to tell us some things, probably I hope people have their pencils out today, and I hope they're getting some ideas, and we'll talk about that. So, you know, share with us a little bit about all these crazy terms, crowdfunding and crowdsourcing and all that stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, crowdfunding, I think everybody thinks of Kickstarter. I think for the most part, when I talk to people who are not in the financial industry, they think, okay, Kickstarter is crowdfunding. And essentially, it sort of is in that it's not equity crowdfunding, which is what there's a term called the Jobs Act that really the government passed back in April 5th, 2012. It took them a while to figure out exactly when they were going to implement that, but that changed some pretty significant things in what it meant for you as an entrepreneur or a company to raise capital, and it changed some things about really who could invest in products. You know, prior to, so let me give you some chunks here. There's equity crowdfunding, and then there's really products that are given out. So there's donations, things like that that you can crowdfund. There's a big difference between them. And today we're going to talk really about what the law of the Jobs Act and what equity crowdfunding is, because that's a significant shift for investors today. You know, one of the big things that changed is it allowed people to generally solicit. Companies before this could not tell people, unless they had a relationship with them, that they were raising capital. They had to use a broker-dealer investment banker to do that.
Those are like using attorneys to draw simple wills, right? It begins to take a lot of time, a lot of effort, and it does get a lot more confusing. Now, has the crowdfunding process actually made things simpler for investors, or is it really just kind of confused the marketplace, both investors and needers?
You know, I think the companies are certainly, there's a perception that that now that these things have passed, and there's a couple different levels of these, there's the what they call Title III, which is crowdfunding that's truly a portal, and you can raise up to $1 million. Non-accredited people, investors can go in there and invest. Those are big shifts. They can raise up to only $1 million, so there's a cap there. That's really, that was designed for true startups. Those are the angel, you know, what angel rounds would look like. Angel investors would be looking at these companies' ideas, if you will, right, to try and help them get started. That's one type. What I think people think that they can just go out and just put their information out there and raise the capital, and that's been, you know, that's just not happening.
Well, it requires active involvement, and you've got to get smarter while you do it. I mean, the second rabbit's not as easy to shoot as the first one, because the rabbits get smarter.
And the competition's out there. You know, I think the competition, there's so many. You know, there's an overload now, I think, of information going out. And there's only the companies that are being successful are what you said. They're very active. They've got a campaign, or they've already got a following of current clients or employees.
Well, we've all got to test and measure. We've all got to grow up a little bit. But, you know, right now we've got more people going into the marketplace, trying to start a company. How do you feel about that? Is that a good thing, or is that...
Great thing. We need more.
We need more. Why do we need more? Talk a little bit about that point of what you've seen in the market since, I guess you've been seriously at this for 8 years, since 08?
Yeah.
You've seen a good evolution of having everybody scared to even take another dollar out of their pocket, invest it somewhere, versus now we've got people, as you say, the angel funding is probably at the highest level it's ever been in the United States.
Yeah, and Atlanta is really the most active place I've probably seen, or one of the more active, in terms of the angel rounds. I think you've got a lot of groups that are really focused on that here. So that's fortunate. I think people have access to a lot of help here if you're at that idea stage. But overall, I think, you know, the last 3 years I've been really engaged with the broker-dealer community, which used to really drive a lot of that, you know, because, again, general solicitation. You almost had to use somebody, you know. So if you didn't, you know, after friends and family, sure, it was tough. So that part's really slowed down. So there is a gap. There's a gap for that, you know, that initial right after the friends and family round. It's really, I see it as being harder at this point, you know, still to raise that capital than it was when I was out raising capital. And I think it's going to catch up now that the portals are out there.
Well, the way the system works, there are always going to be some gaps. Yeah. Well, Delray, let's take a little wrap here and take a little break and get us back on kilter. We'll go over to Ralph for a minute and talk about some experience, because I know he has experience working with companies in the M&A area. So we'll take a little break there out. We'll come back to you with Buckhead's finest information and some of our best people here on Pro Business Channel.
All right. Just a reminder, listeners, you're listening to the Buckhead Business Show, being brought to you by, in part, the Buckhead Business Association. You can go to buckheadbusiness.org and check out all the events and activities and becoming a member. Rich Casson over here, producer, engineer, co-hosting alongside Michael Moore in our billion-dollar Buckhead view. Yeah.
That's right. Now, Rich,
because we did the math, and there is no million-dollar building out there. They're all more.
So
and plus, we added them all up, and yeah.
And as Sam Maciel says, you just buy a little bit of Buckhead, take good care of it, and they'll take good care of you. And these business owners, building owners, certainly have exhibited that.
So before we welcome our next guest, Ralph Watson, to the show, as a past president of the BBA, what's your best pitch for joining, becoming a member of the BBA?
Well, I was going to say, if I were more prepared, I'd tell you exactly who the speaker was going to be on Thursday morning. Maybe we can look that up during the next break. But I tell you what, when I joined the BBA back many years ago, the first thing I found out was that I was going to learn something on Thursday morning breakfasts, because we had breakfast every Thursday. Now we just do it 3 days a month. But we had speakers, we had information, and we had fellowships that you really just can't duplicate, even down at the White House, although that's the place we all gather for breakfast here
right.
at Buckhead.
And it continues to this day. That's three Thursdays, and I think the third Thursday we do it after hours.
Yep, we found out that everybody doesn't like to get up as early as you, Rich, and be there at 7 o'clock. So we take the third Thursday of the month off traditionally, which is why we did the Taste of Buckhead Business last week.
Yep.
And then we gather, but we gather at the City Club in Buckhead, looking at that view of the whole Buckhead area, all 360 degrees of it. So hope you will join us at 7:15.
Yep. And if you're listening to all these gentlemen in the studio beyond 35 years and older.
And we have a younger group, too. But Rich, you're outside that group. We have a Young Bucks for the under 35. So it's a great opportunity to gather with folks of your own age.
Well said.
And persuasion.
All right.
All right. So, Ralph, you've actually been a member of Buckhead Business Association years ago, even a board member. But you've been stretching out your wings and you're doing a little bit more consulting, a little bit more traveling again. So talk to us a little bit about what you've been up to and background.
Well, I'm trying to restrict the traveling at this point. But
you've got grandbabies, too. We understand.
Yeah, nine of them, thank you. I had, early in my career, I was working with a Dairyman Incorporated Flavor Rich down in Louisiana. And they went through a consulting project, and part of it was to survey to all the middle and upper level executives. And, of course, they told us now, understand there's no wrong answers to this. You just tell us, what you think. So somehow after everybody turned their surveys in, they figured out how to grade it. And fortunately, I ended up in the top 5% of all the middle and upper level executives Alexander Proudfoot had ever surveyed. And it sort of put that seed, if you planted that seed, if you will, to one day I might want to give this a try. So later on in my career, I did, and worked with international consulting firms, and in the early part of 2014, I was doing international coaching with 10 businesses in Europe. I guess the difference, sometimes people say, what's the difference between coaching and consulting? And with consulting, the company ends up going in there and putting all the systems in place, and I like to say they build a car and give you the keys and show you where to put the gas. In coaching, you have to teach the business owner how to do that
how
on his own.
How to build a car as well.
Yeah,
as
how to build a car
and
put it together. Back in the Gulf War days, I was watching those, I think along with everybody else, watching those precision-guided bombs go down those
smokestacks
and explode. And at the time, I was working with a strategic marketing company, and it just sort of struck me that, if we could deliver a marketing message that precisely with that amount of impact, that'd be pretty cool. So I formed a company called Precision Guided Group. And today we're our theme, if you will, is to be greater faster. It's not about doing as much as it is being. The business owner, we primarily work with this small to mid-cap privately held companies. You've got to have that integrity inside, and it's not about being more, it's about being greater. And we believe it's not good enough to be greater slower.
I made the comment about traveling. You're doing traveling less, but talk about what a regular engagement might look like for that executive of that mid-cap company that suddenly says, oh, I must have some problems here. I can't figure out what I'm supposed to do next.
Well, generally speaking, they're so deep in the swamp that with the alligators, they haven't thought very far ahead. And I use riddles sometimes in my presentation. I always like to ask a business owner if they know the best time to plant a pine tree. Now, being a country boy from Phoenix City, Alabama, Michael, you ought to know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
20
years ago, exactly. And that's really...
Second best time is when? Today.
Today. And but what's happened is the best time to plan your exit strategy is the day you put the key in the door. And unfortunately, too many people wait until they're our age and say, okay, I think I'm ready to exit. And, of course, I'm sure you've seen some of that too, Delray. But there's two big components to that. And I saw you wanted to talk about our purpose, and my purpose, frankly, is to take business owners beyond their limits, whatever those limits may be, if it's operational or whatever. But the exit strategy is two big components. The first one is an operational component where it's important in order to get the best value for your company when you're wanting to sell it. It's important to have the business structured to the place where it can operate effectively and efficiently without the daily oversight of the owner, because, hello, the owner's wanting to walk out the door. The other component of that is the legal and taxation issue. Even if you lock the door and walk away from a business, it is a taxable event. Mm-hmm. So we don't believe in trying to do everything ourselves or reinvent the wheel. We found some people in companies who have already developed some pretty good wheels. One is the Business Wealth Preservation Group out of Chicago, and this gentleman has a Master of Science in Taxation as well as a JD degree.
Good.
So that it allows him to kind of put his feet in both of those arenas. And he works on entity structure and tax minimization, the legal and taxation issues of the exit strategy. Working with a consulting firm out of Cincinnati, Ohio, to do the operational part.
So it sounds like you pretty well put a recipe together to help people cook a little faster, cook a little better, and wind up with a result that they may not have been planning for.
There you go.
Absolutely.
So, when you talk about a business, you said you got to plan your day before you open the door. Everybody's not always planning to sell their business. Certainly, everybody doesn't know how to grow their business. How do you become the baby shaker to let them understand what they need to do next?
Well, there's a seminal book out there, The E-Myth Revisited. I would recommend everybody go get a copy of that if you own a business. But
that's by that guy Michael Gerber.
Michael Gerber,
bald-headed guy, talked fast. I remember him from the 80s. 70s,
exactly. But as I said, most of them are so deep into the technical side of the business, the operational side, that they really don't have a chance to look at the strategic plan. And that's kind of my specialty, strong suit, is the strategic planning of the company. And of course, you need your purpose, vision, mission, core values, sure. But then you need the tactical plan, the 1-3-5 year, short-term, medium-term, long-range goals and objectives. And then you've got to have your financials set up. One thing I've come to learn, Michael, and this may sound a little woo-woo, but businesses try to talk to their owners.
A business will
try to tell an owner somebody's stealing from him, or if his scrap's getting too high, or if his marketing's not working, but the question is, do the business owner have the ears to hear what the business is saying? And most of them have never really delved into the marketing, to the management side.
No, they've got their head down running the other way, typically.
Yeah, I got a lot of friends who are electricians, so I kind of pick on them a little bit. But
charged individual
of all the electricians I know, I don't know the first one that went out of business because he did not know how to wire a house. He went out of business because he didn't know how to fund his business, Delray.
Pay his taxes on time.
Keep
his truck maintained.
And fire his brother-in-law.
Firing your brother-in-law and hiring your mother-in-law may not be a good idea in any business.
Well, sometimes they don't ask us on the front end, and we have to come in and clean up the mess after they've already made it.
That's right.
But the key to it is getting these, and if I had to say in short words, and I know this is an intelligent market you're broadcasting to, exactly what consultants do or should do is they put franchise systems in independent businesses.
Yep.
If you go out and buy a franchise from McDonald's, you paid $250,000 or whatever it is,
but you
and
can
you get the
hamburger.
Notebook and you get the software and you get the advertising campaign. When you go in business for yourself, you're pretty much out there on your own.
You got it right.
And one of the real problems small business owners have or business owners is trying to do everything themselves.
You got that right. Well, I heard you talk about the 4-inch binder and all the instructions and rules. And in a minute, when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about what that planning process, what that update process, how you check, how you figure out if you're doing the right stuff. And we'll get both of you guys talking about that. So, Rich, we're going to take a break.
I always feel like a break. We're going to run around the building here or grab some coffee or.
Nah, we're going to let these guys stretch a little bit. And somebody says, are we doing the Howard Stern thing anymore? Are we doing this whole bunch of interactive? Anybody going to come naked through the studio soon?
That's another show.
That's another show.
Yeah, no, you missed that one. That was last night's show, yeah. So once again, Rich Kasson over here on behalf of the Pro Business Channel. You're listening to the Buckhead Business Show, being brought to you by the Buckhead Business Association. Just go to buckheadbusiness.org. And as we mentioned earlier in the other break, if you're in Buckhead, doing business in Buckhead, live, work, and play, this is the de facto Chamber of Commerce because it's not a city, but this is
since
1951,
the BBA started, but Buckhead community has been here since 1832, I think, the crossroads reform.
He's looking over at Ralph, whatever, yeah. So.
Well, there's always a story about Buckhead. Now, if we had some of our true historians here, they could tell you exactly. But, you know, one thing I noticed that Buckhead has changed a lot. It doesn't matter whether you've only been here a month. Well, maybe a month is too short a time. But if you've been here more than a month or a year or 10 years, or if you haven't been here in 10 or 15 years, it's amazing what's going on in our community. So be a part.
And just pick up a copy of the Buckhead Guidebook, right?
That's right. It's available at bookstores everywhere. If you know Sam Assell or if you know me, I got one in the car I'll share with you today.
All right.
So let's roll back in now. Yeah. Let's go back to what Ralph talked about a little earlier. He talked about that that binder and all the procedures and process. Now, Delray, you're helping fund new businesses, and I want to ask this question, loaded question. Is a business plan and all those financial things that the bankers used to make us do to think about even getting a loan necessary anymore?
Well, to get a loan, you definitely need to have your plan in place. I think it is necessary, absolutely. What's necessary, not necessarily, I think, for some of the crowdfunding, marketing is your biggest. I hate to say this. To get the initial funding now with crowdfunding, and I think that's a real, you know, to say what was working. I think we talked a lot about a lot of the issues last time, but what's happened is it's shifted away from what the investment banker wanted and the banker and all of those, like you said, the financials, the business plans, all those things to, okay, well, we're going to put this up, we're going to do it with crowdfunding or Title III specifically, and they're going to really just need a good, really good marketing plan. And that comes from a business plan, mm-hmm. but it's very high level.
It's very exciting.
It's got to get people excited and that sort of thing. And that's the key to their success on a crowdfunding type of a program.
Well, I think it all goes back to results. If people can see what you're doing, yep. And, you know, as one of our great one of our great successful entrepreneurs right here in Atlanta said, you know, if you don't have a certain level of recurring revenue happening every month, it doesn't matter how good your business model is because you don't have customers.
Right.
Who was one of the leadership people many years ago said, you're only a leader when you look back and people are following you.
Yeah.
And the same thing with business. You're only in business if you have customers. You can plan and plan and plan and clever, but as Ralph said, when you put that key in the door and launch, yeah, you better have a plan for what happens the next day. Otherwise, you'll be like the people at Flying Biscuits. If you only made 200 biscuits a day, you sell them all out by 9 o'clock, you're out of business that day. You close the doors. Hopefully you've created enough excitement so that people are standing at your door in the morning waiting to see, can I get one of those biscuits tomorrow?
Yeah, sustainability. I mean, you're talking about consulting with companies, thinking through what are the next steps. Absolutely.
Well, and you know, I also worked as a director for an investment banking firm, which kind of is the higher end, you know, past the crowdfunding.
Yep.
And one thing that that I come to realize is that professional investors bet on the jockey, not necessarily the horse.
Yep.
So you can have the greatest product ever, but I know you watch the Shark Tank, and yep, I can sit there and almost tell you as soon as he says what he's looking for, whether he's going to get it or not.
Right.
But a lot of times, Mr. Wonderful will say, I want 100% of your company. I want you out of it. And,
right,
and he's
right.
He's identified a jockey that doesn't know how to ride the horse he's created.
He just fell off.
Yes, he did. And, you know, when you get in those upper levels, Michael, I think it's still important that you have that, you say a 4-inch binder, but, it's really a third-party verified documentation because a lot of these business owners go out there and buy them a copy of, you know, some kind of business plan software, and they plug it in all these numbers, And they hire somebody who did it in their
company, and they never read it either, which is one of the things, as Delray said, when you talk about a person taking a company to market in order to help have someone come alongside, raise the money, and invest it in your horse and your jockey to believe that you can win the race, better make sure you're in the right race. So talk a little bit about how people are using these platforms. Talk a little bit about some experiences and some successes that you've seen in your groups.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's another group of when you talk about crowdfunding, there's Reg A Plus. We didn't talk about those. Are the larger, pre-IPO, I guess, crowdfunding type opportunities. Elio Motors was the first one. Everybody probably knows about them. They were in the news this week. They brought their car out, their prototype, to New York. Everybody was really excited about it. 80 miles to the gallon. Elio Motors, they were successful largely because of the marketing campaign. They spent $250,000 to do it. They did have a base they were marketing to, and so again, and it's a product people really are excited about. It was a marketing campaign that really got them the capital that they wanted. Now they have the task of actually building the company and actually operating it, right? So you've got to have both, I think, on the bigger deals. We had Legion M as a company under Title III. I think it's the first one I've heard of that. I'm sure there are more, but we interviewed them two days before they launched on Title III, which is the up to $1 million, truly using a crowdfunding portal. And they were brilliant in their marketing. They are, they're a firm that went out and said, look, we're going to build films. We're going to do great films. And we want our, the folks that are going to watch them to participate and be owners in our company. And so they went out with movies and, they did exactly what they do. It's marketing. Right. And they went out to these shows and they raised their money. And that'll be step one. And then their plan is to build a good business model, which is step two, obviously, of their plan. And then three would be go to Reg A and raise another $30 or $40 million so that they can have some sustainability. So I think there are some strategies that are getting put in place that are very significant but very different from what people are traditionally used to.
Well, it's not like starting your neighborhood blank operation. If you've got people building cars, you've got folks looking at new opportunities that don't exist. Remember that many of the companies that are going to be around 5 and 10 years from now are going to be the brainchild of things that are needed in the marketplace every day. I'm sure you've seen some very interesting new projects other than cars, and I'm sure that you'll be working with Ralph. You're going to probably see some pretty new projects coming down the road, because as people realize they didn't figure it all out in advance. I do want to spend back just a minute and talk about teams. One of the things I think, Ralph, you outlined is people need to get the right resources and keep the right resources in play and not let them get dusty and sit on the shelf. So take a minute and shoot about that area for a second.
Well, it's, as I was saying, the 1-3-5 year, you got to keep the – too many times they'll go invest a lot of money, put a business plan together, it gets put on the shelf, and that's the end of it. Another one of the big issues with small business owners or privately held companies is there's really nobody to hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. So it's easy for them to, make a commitment. I'm going to lock myself into jail. But they've still got the key to the cell, and they can let themselves out. And the other, if I could also make another quick oversight, a lot of business owners think, well, if I can get incorporated, I'm bulletproof. But then they never have a board meeting. They don't keep their corporate minutes up. They're commingling funds. And these are all things that a sharp lawyer would pierce the corporate veil and get after their personal assets.
Could drag them down a very, 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 very deep hole.
Yes. Right. So it's important. And for example, in entity structuring, that every ride out at Six Flags is a separate corporation. So, it's structured so that if you get hurt on one ride, here's the keys to it, but you're not getting the rest of the park.
We had that happen with I saw the video the other day of the parents were actually holding up the ride that was falling down to hit the park.
Right, yeah.
And so they could get the kids off. So, Delray, we've got about a few more minutes here to wrap up with. I know you're in the marketplace here in Atlanta. You've located in our city. You're helping people out. As you said, Atlanta seems to be a focal point for the Southeast, and we're very blessed with that. All roads lead to Atlanta, or at least from it. So we've got more people coming in to learn and educate. You're doing a great job of doing that, so we look forward to having you back to the show. But any closing thoughts about what people can do to make Atlanta even better for this venture?
Yeah, I think that I think that just getting engaged, I think one of the things that's really important in any business, with crowdfunding or without it, is relationships. I think one of the things that there's a common thread, if you look at what was successful in all the crowdfunding type of products, as well as the companies that are maybe don't fit into that category, because if you don't have a product or you don't have a base, about 85% of companies will not fit into a crowdfunding type situation. They're going to do traditional fundraising. With or without it, it really comes down to relationships. I think at the end of the day, there's trust somewhere in there, trusting in the product, trusting in the crowdfunding. Real estate has been very successful, by the way, in crowdfunding, because people mm-hmm. trust in real estate. I mean, they know it's there. So
we have one here in the town called Ground Floor, which is allowing people to be investors in projects and products they would not have the technical expertise, nor the knowledge, nor the desire. And they would just be flat scared.
Yeah. So keep those relationships going. They're crucial in a good business model.
All right. So, Ralph, you've got to wrap up to talk about what people need to look at. And I want you both to give your contact info one more time.
Okay.
Or maybe the first time.
Maybe the first time. Our website is begreaterfaster.com. And my cell number is 404-520-1030. Web address is rwatson@begreaterfaster.com.
Very good.
And, of course, let me kind of make a pitch here for the BBA, since you mentioned relationships. That's a great place to start. And the reason that Buckhead does not have a Chamber of Commerce is because they're an unincorporated entity. And so the BBA stepped in 51 to fill that void.
In our 65th year.
There you go. And in large measure, due to your efforts, sir.
I can pat
you on the back a little bit.
Me and a lot of other folk. I've been at it since 1999. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dale Ray, we look forward to having you down with Visit. Give them your contact info as we wrap up here.
You bet. Thank you very much. FirstLookEquities.com. You can find out more about our organization and how we find and connect investment opportunities with funding sources and resources. Phone number is 832-922-1199.
Great. So reach out and grab him, and we look forward to seeing you next week right here at the Pro Business Channel with a show about the Buckhead Business Show.
Thank you for joining us and our guests on the Pro Business Channel. Use the social media links here to share today's show and stay tuned for the next episode of the Buckhead Business Show. Brought to you by the Buckhead Business Association.